Welcome to Coffee and Literature with Eli and Todd, a high school class that is really a conversation.
About literature, not coffee. Ah, it's hot.
So I want to start off episode one with a bit of an introduction to what we're doing, who I am, who Todd is, and how this is kind of going to work. My name is Eli. I am a senior at Colorado Timberline Academy, and I am taking a class with Todd Macon.
That's right.
And we are going to read four books, record a podcast on each of them, and the way the podcast is going to be formatted is we're each going to write a little segment about what we thought of the book. And then afterwards, we're going to discuss the book.
Yeah, have a conversation. And my name's Todd Macon, and I'm a literature and history teacher at Colorado Timberline Academy. I've been teaching for 21 years. And what's nice about this class is the student-to-teacher ratio, which is 1-to-1. Makes for an easy class.
So to start off episode one, we're talking about The Little Prince. We read this in about 3 days. And despite the shortness of the book, it was very deep and very impactful. This book took me off guard. On the outside, it looks like a children's book. The cover with a dark blue background of space with a poorly drawn character of a boy, the little prince, standing on an absurdly small planet with flowers and volcanoes, appears as a simple, happy book with a simple plot in which everyone gets along in the end. The infant listeners and the elementary readers are left with an easy-to-grasp message, such as don't talk to strangers or don't steal or lie. When I opened the book and began reading, I was hit in the face with a somber tone, one of reflective sadness. The tone itself reveals everything as a metaphor. Reading, I can just tell that everything that is said has some deeper meaning than what I initially thought. The beauty of reading the book is putting together the puzzle of each chapter. That being said, I'll leave that to you, the listener, to do for yourself. For this podcast, I'd like to focus on the bigger picture. One thing apparent from the beginning of the story is the problem of circular logic. In every encounter the little prince has with other beings, they talk in circles. This is most prominent when he speaks with a drunkard. The prince asks, "Why are you drinking?" To which the drunkard replies, "To forget that I'm ashamed." The little prince asks what he has to be ashamed of, and the drunkard replies, "Of drinking." A lot of the lessons in the book are on how to live life. The little prince is a vessel for the author to communicate what makes people happy and unhappy. One lesson is death. At the end of the book, the little prince dies. We, as modern people, are surrounded by circles. People rarely have definite answers. Everyone talks in circles, especially in this book. And in the end, life completes its circle when we, quote, go back to where we came from. I believe that this story is not some fantastic tale of a space boy, but simply an incredibly metaphorical tale of a boy who grows up. As he travels through his world, he meets adults and people who make no sense to him. He learns lessons, gets hurt, and in the end, becomes too, quote, homesick to continue. I see two explanations for this book. One is that the little prince is unable to accept the world that he is forced to live in and decides to end his life once again in a metaphorical manner. The other is that the little prince dies, and his very death is another metaphor. His creativity, his insistence that his questions are answered, his love of the world die, and he grows up. He accepts the obscurity of his world and becomes just like the businessman or the king. Anyway, this isn't a conspiracy theory podcast, so now I'd like to pose the question, why read this book? This book is a classic for a reason, and I'm shocked I hadn't read it until now. Whether this book changes you or not, whether you come away from it a changed person or not, there are very valuable lessons to be learned from the mistakes and sentiments of the Little Prince. My favorite one is not to judge people by their words, but their actions. The book itself is a parable made up of countless parables, and that makes its meaning very flexible. Every person comes away from this book with a different lesson. I learned this in my discussion with Todd, in which the quotes and passages that impacted us the most matched up almost nowhere. And that's why this book is such a timeless classic. It shapes and molds itself to the reader no matter what time it is, no matter where you are, no matter how old you are. So with that being said, I'll pass this on to Todd.
I vividly remember the first time I read The Little Prince. I was also 17 and starting to mature a little. I loved reading books, but they were more often than not thrillers or fantasy or science fiction. I don't remember how The Little Prince came into my hand, but I do remember feeling a bit of angst and ennui, skipping school and driving to a park in my crappy Ford Fiesta, and sitting under a tree under a chilly spring sun to read a silly little book. Like Eli, I was shocked at how deep and how thoughtful the story was. I was even more shocked that I was open to how deep and thoughtful the story was. Reading quietly, by myself, on my own terms, a story that was so obviously literary made me feel sophisticated and intelligent at a time when I sorely needed to feel that way. Now, I am nearing 50 years of age, and it has been perhaps 20 years since I last picked up Saint-Exupéry's classic. My first reaction is to say that the book has changed, but that is, of course, absurd, because it is I that has changed. Now I see the parables within the greater parable of The Little Prince as an author's incredible and authentic journey into psychological and existential landscapes. The desert in which he finds the little prince is an emotional desert, but one that becomes beautiful through the perseverance it takes to explore it. This becomes a personal lesson for anyone who takes an honest look at his or her life changes, be it the turmoils of 17 or during the reflections of middle age. At 17, I remember the parable of the baobabs being that which struck me the most. That it is important to tend your planet, or face the consequences that can tear your world apart. At 50, the passage that haunts me the most is, "It's so mysterious, the land of tears." As I grow older and my experiences accumulated and overlap, this story reminds me that when one is feeling isolated, lost, scared, and old, he or she should wander into a mysterious landscape where something important hides in the beautiful silence.
Okay, so now that we've finished giving our first ideas on the book, we can jump into the discussion part of this podcast.
While we were reading it, and once we finished it, I really wanted to make sure that you liked it. And you said you did. But what is it that jumped out most at you?
I think how well it applied to my life. And I think that's the beauty of the book. Like I said, it kind of applies to everyone's life, anywhere, at any time, at any age, because it's just so subjective. And being here at a boarding school, you're surrounded by the same people all the time. And so it's kind of hard to dislike people because it puts you in a bad situation. So being given a different perspective on how to judge people, how to tell if they're good people or not, was really impactful.
It's almost like this is your little planet.
Yeah.
And you have this cast of characters.
A very, very little planet. For anyone who's listening that doesn't know, my school has 17 students.
Right. And
which
a rustic,
is why I am a class of one.
Yeah, and it's a rustic campus up in the mountains near Durango, Colorado. So
yeah.
A little isolated.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you picked up on that, because I think that kind of appreciation of the book will help us answer the question, which is our question for the whole class, is what makes a book or a story literary? And I think as we approach that answer together, it'll be comments like that that'll help us.
Yeah, of course.
You know, Little Prince doesn't pull any punches, like you said. It hit you right in the face. So let's jump into something that you wrote that I wanted to latch on to, was you made a reference to the snake.
Yeah.
In the story, and the role of death, in terms of what Saint-Exupéry is trying to communicate to his audience. So what are your thoughts on that snake?
If I'm being honest, the snake interested me more because I didn't understand why it was there. Why is it a snake? Why does it say the things it does? And obviously, you know, in the end of the book, it plays the role of killing the little prince, and that's why it's important. But the way this book was written, it doesn't end there. Nothing ends there with this book. This book is always something more. And what interested me about the snake was I didn't know what that something more was.
I think it's important to note, I mean, as you said, this the snake kills the little prince, but it's not malicious. The little snake invites the snake to bite him in order to, quote, send him home.
Yeah, of course. And when he first meets the snake, he says, the snake says, you know, I can do this if you want to. If not, I'll leave you alone. And the prince is like, no, I know what you mean. Bye. And then he comes back later and he's too homesick, I guess. And that was another thing that impacted me a lot. It's the word homesick. And at least, you know, the way I interpreted it, because there's lots of ways to interpret this book, was home is the stars. Home is before and after the life we have here on this earth. And there's a lot of ways to interpret what that is. But, you know, I think this book is really neutral on that subject.
That's really interesting, because the idea of home, and I guess we can come back around to the snake with it. For me, home for the little prince and really home for Saint-Exupéry is more a sense of what it means to come to terms.
Yeah.
To live authentically. And I think from an existential standpoint, I taught an existentialism class last year. And that was the whole premise, was how do you come to grips with the problems and challenges and knots, as well as the beauty of the things that we experience. How do you reconcile all those together? And I see the little prince really struggling to do that. And then also the narrator, who's crashed into this desert.
Yeah.
Who also needs to get home.
Yeah.
And he never gives a reason why he needs to get home.
He just does.
He just does. And same with little. Well, what's the little prince's reason for going home?
He left the flower. And that's the only thing that makes sense to him, I think.
Yeah, his love. His love for the flower. You know, I think great authors will draw from a personal wellspring to find that tone and that story. And just so you know, Saint-Exupéry had a wife that was supposedly very much like the rose.
Yeah.
In the story. And he was a pilot in real life. And he flew many missions. He did crash in the desert at one point with another pilot, and they had to walk out. And I know with his success and his career as a pilot, he was gone a lot. And that his wife and him were at times estranged and their relationship strained. And when you know that, and then you when you look at that character of the rose and his, it kind of things start to fall into place.
Yeah, yeah.
But back to that, I guess that question of home and the snake. One thing I think that you said that I liked a lot was that the little prince wasn't scared.
Yeah.
Why do you think that was?
I think on a surface level, it's because he's delusional.
What does that mean?
I think he thinks the snake means he'll just send him home.
Uh-huh.
And I think he knows that the snake means to kill him, but I think that, you know, being young and having that creativity, you don't really grasp the concept of death. And I think that's what it is on a surface level. But if you want to delve deeper, I think what it means is the prince isn't scared because he knows that he can never go back to the rose, and he knows that he won't be able to accept that.
Hmm. Wow, that's a completely different take than I've ever seen it before. I like it a lot. That maybe there's a sense of futility there that I never keyed into. But also, as a 17-year-old reader of this story, Dukin, I mean, I think so much of the mindset of someone in their teens is not being able to grasp their own, well, in the book, he refers to it as being ephemeral.
Yeah.
Something that won't last. And to pick up on that at 17 is pretty heavy. You know, I don't know how many other opportunities you have to kind of reflect on that. Maybe you do. There was a quote I liked a lot, and for us it was on page 51, where the snake says to him, I feel so sorry for you, being so weak on this granite earth. I can help you someday if you grow too homesick for your planet. I can. And then the little prince, I think this is notable, cuts him off before he can even say what it is he can do. He says, oh, I understand just what you mean, said little prince. But why do you always speak in riddles? I solved them all, said the snake. And they were both silent.
Yeah, that was one quote that I took note of, but I didn't understand. And I think that's why the snake was so intriguing, is because he says so many things that are so obviously important and obviously have so much deeper meaning, but I couldn't grasp all of them. And that's kind of been all I've thought about when I thought about the little prince, is why did the snake say this?
Huh.
Why did the snake say that?
Yeah. It's actually a small part of the book in a way, right? There's not, the snake doesn't come up.
It comes up twice.
Right. And then the narrator sees the snake and panics.
Yeah. Yeah. Because he's grown up. And he's scared of death.
Wow. Yeah.
Or he's scared of the little prince dying.
Or both. It's that notion of being ephemeral. What's another scene from the book that kind of sticks with you?
I think obviously the flower was very impactful, but I feel like that's I don't want to sound vain, but it's too much of a teenager thing to talk about.
What do you mean?
It's like bad girlfriends and stuff like that. Like, you know, for me to act like I understand what was really going on wouldn't, it's not really my place. And it's also...
Why? You haven't experienced...
I have.
The affection? what the fox calls being tamed?
Yeah, that was what I was going to bring up next.
Uh-huh.
But also I think it's talked about enough that people understand what the rose is, what the rose is doing, it doesn't really need to be talked about. I think that was one part that wasn't really revolutionary. It was just, yep, bad relationship, move on. But the fox, yes, was very impactful. Because I think this applies to most people, but I think it felt like it applied to me especially, because the fox talks about how, when you look at a fox, you just say, oh, that's just like every other fox on this planet. But once you get to know a fox, and once you get, once that fox knows who you are, once you know who that fox is, once you guys are acquainted with each other, once you know things about each other, that fox isn't like every other fox. And I think that's where the part about the rose does become interesting, is when, after he visits the fox, he goes to the rose garden and says, you're not like my rose. Because I watered my rose, I took care of my rose, and you're just another rose. Because nobody's watered you, nobody's taken care of you, nobody's gotten to know you. And I think that was something I thought about a lot for a while when I was in my elementary days, is everybody's just another person, but at the same time, everybody is so individual. Everyone is just like me, you know? Everyone sees through their eyes. And that's not something I can see, and they can't see through my eyes either.
Yeah, that's another big challenge to reconcile, I think, not just in this story, but in one's personal life, is that feeling part of the crowd and also feeling an individual has individual needs and desires and baggage from past experiences. I mean, I think about some of the mini parables that were there, also the lamplighter. Who gets so mired in his work. It's almost like the work is driving him. And then the train, is that a train conductor? Remember the people just rushing by really fast?
Yeah.
And Little Prince says, well, where are they going? He says they don't know. And it's only the children that stop and look through the windows at where they're at. And I thought, in light of what you're saying, is like we all get on this train that's rushing through, whether it's high school or a career or a family. And it's easy to kind of let that drive us. I was really touched by those parts of the book, trying to remember, oh, yeah, the time I spend with my daughter that's outside of our routine is the important stuff.
Yeah.
And I need to keep that at the forefront of my mind. That's really difficult to do. And maybe it's not just with family or everything. I mean, it's the chance to do that with colleagues and students and friends, and that's where the book kind of punched me in the gut, is more of like a reminder of things I'd forgotten.
Yeah. No, that part was also very impactful for me because, at the age of 17, I'm at that point in your life where you're, I don't want to say forced, but you're supposed to begin thinking about what you want to do with the rest of your life, because if you don't start thinking about it, nothing's going to happen. And I think a lot of times in the world that we live in today, what's stressed more than anything is a career. And a lot of times people get lost in their career. They get lost on that train. They're just rushing and rushing and rushing, and they don't know where to. They're
Right.
just rushing. They're just going. They're just working and working and working, and they get lost in the world of being successful, doing what people want them to do, and in the end they die, and on their deathbed they don't know who they are. They realize that all they did was work. And I think an important realization for me was that it doesn't matter all that much. If you find the things that you value, if you find the people that you value, if you like what you're doing, even if it's not working, even if you're living out on the street, a life worth living isn't up to anyone else to tell you what it is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the riddle, I think. And that's hard to confront. That's a daunting task. But it's a worthy one, of course. Which made me think, you know, that's why the quiet, I keep coming back to what I call the emotional landscape in the book. And this beautiful desert, and he falls in love with this quietness, this openness, which allows him reflection, which allows him to draw dunes at night with a star above. And that's his final drawing in the book. And he says, this is one of the most beautiful, most saddest landscapes I know. And if you come across the Little Prince, please get news, you know, get word to me.
Yeah.
But you know, that Little Prince is that persona inside of us that we're having that conversation with at some point. So what makes this book literary?
I think it's important to look at the definition of literary before we discuss that.
Uh-huh.
And looking it up on the internet here, it says that literature is defined as writings having excellence of form or expression and expressing ideas of permanent or universal interest. And I think what applies to The Little Prince the most in this sense is permanent or universal interest.
Mm.
And I think that was really what the author was trying to achieve with this book, definitely, with its ability to last through time and its ability to mold itself to any person, anywhere, any type of person. And that's that universal interest piece is... anyone can be interested in this. Anyone can take something from it if they just read it and think about it.
That's a challenging line to walk, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's obviously so personal to him, and yet to express those personal needs, desires, and fears and everything else, but in such an open way that it feels authentic but is also applicable to everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how many adults you've had a conversation with where they were able to tell you personal stories and you still felt the same way, that you're picking up on that universal relevance.
Yeah.
But he pulls it off.
He definitely does. Yeah.
Wow. Good. The other thing that we talked about, too, was the notion of a parable. But that was kind of the same definition, right? It had universal appeal, but in a more shorter version.
Yeah.
I think the next episode is going to be really interesting because we're going to move from this book, which I think one adjective is sweet.
Yeah.
And sad. And then we're going to jump into William Faulkner's As I Lay Dying, which I think it's no spoiler to tell you that it's a little darker. It's a lot darker. And to maybe have that juxtaposition will be interesting.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited for that one. Never read Faulkner. Never read The Little Prince.
Yeah, well, and I guess we can finish on the question is, I think in some ways, I hope that you can answer this question, is why, not only what makes a story literature, but why read books at all? And yeah. Maybe it's too early to get into that. It's a later episode, maybe. But I mean, I think we're off to a good start. I think you've enjoyed reading, and hopefully, as we get to something that's maybe a little more challenging in a way, Hopefully we can, or you can maintain your enthusiasm.
Definitely.
All right. Well, good. Thanks for the conversation.
Thank you. And thank you for listening. And no matter what time it is, have a good rest of your life.